Hello, everybody. Welcome to the 115th episode of the Manor Podcast. I'm your co-host, Roger Bodie, joined as always with my best friend and other co-host, Michael Hamilton. Michael, what's a good question to ask you right now? What should I be asking you about? What do you want to talk about that I should be asking you about?
What should you be asking me about? You know, that's actually a really interesting question that you've asked me. I feel like it makes me think, you know?
Yeah. That's the point of these questions, to make you think, our audience think, me think. Everybody's thinking.
Yeah.
That's what all the cool kids are doing.
Thinking is cool, I guess. So, things are a little bit weird, I guess, because we're recording Thursday morning because I was like knocked out dead. Like all day Tuesday. I slept the entire day, basically. I was up enough to ask you if we could record a different time.
Yes, and I said sure, because I was still recovering. I feel a lot better now. I think Tuesday was like my last like iffy day, and then Wednesday, yesterday, I felt a lot better, and today woke up and I could breathe just normally. It was great. I was going to say sick, but it's the opposite of sick.
Literally the opposite of sick. So, yeah, I went to the Alpha Clash tournament last weekend, and I had some horrible flight situations where I missed like half the tournament, and I came back. I was feeling good when I got back Monday night, and then I went out to dinner with Casey, and then I woke up in the middle of the night and just felt awful. A bunch of stomach pain, and I'm not sure if it was like food poisoning or something else, but I had a lot of stomach pain, and I tried to get back to sleep, and then I woke up Tuesday morning and I was really stressed because I didn't feel like doing anything. And I'm like, I need to be doing things. Worlds is coming up in like 2 weeks. I'm not ready. I need to be doing things. And I think the combination of like having a stomach ache and getting myself really stressed out gave me a pretty bad migraine. And then I just basically slept for more than 24 hours with like waking up for like an hour or two in the middle, but then I fall back asleep. And I don't think I've ever like slept that much.
When I'm sick, I love sleeping. Like, I don't like sleeping when I'm healthy. Zero sleep when I'm healthy. All asleep when I'm sick. I've happily slept for like 24 hours plus straight when I've been sick before in the past.
Okay. I think it worked. I was pretty unhappy every time I was awake, and when I was asleep, I was not awake, and that was great. And now I feel a lot better. So
yeah, it's good to sleep when you're sick, because one, it helps your body recover faster, and two, being conscious is miserable when your body's not functioning the right way. So just skip that part, and then that way you'll have more energy once you're better again, and then you could go right back to not sleeping. It's my foolproof plan.
Yes. I'm going to continue trying to sleep reasonable amounts, but not as much as I did that Tuesday.
That's fair. Well, we're not going to have a sleeping podcast today, but it's still generally health related, I guess.
Yeah. We want to talk about mental health today.
It's been a while since we did a mental health episode. We did one a long time ago, right? Like The Grind or something like that. I was like, what of our like first dozen or so episodes? Let me look. Yeah.
It was really early on.
The Grind and Mental Health, episode number 20.
So it's been probably 2 years since we've talked about mental health, like specifically.
Almost exactly. We did release that on October 6th, 2022. Apparently my mental health is not good in October of 2022. Because this was also then right around the time when I started getting really burned out in 2023, and then we went on hiatus shortly after.
Yeah, that is true. October is not a good time of the year for you.
No. Let's see here. When did we officially go back on hiatus? We made it all the way to October. We made it to the end of October. October 31st was when we released See You Wraith Cowboy.
But we were pretty burned out at the end of October. Before the end, we were very burned out, and it just took us a while before we actually like admitted we were going to take a break.
Yeah. So what's the common denominator here? Is it just the change, the fall leaves make me sad? Does the shortening of the days make me sad? Does the metagame that strikes every fall particularly make me sad?
I don't know. I think Worlds is always coming up in this time, but you weren't going to Worlds either the first 2 years.
I've always been too sad to go to Worlds.
But this time it's in Japan and you love
Yeah,
Japan.
Yeah. Can't not go to Japan, you know? That'd be crazy.
I have heard like there's like studies that like during the winter and times of the year where it's less nice outside, people are generally less happy.
Yeah, but like I go outside and try to like take walks and get my vitamin D and stuff like that. Like I generally go outside more than I do during the summertime, at least because it's like cooling down and I like the cooler weather.
Yeah, it is really nice to go out and walk in like 60 to 70 degree weather.
Yeah. And we're not going through hurricanes. It's very nice. We live in Indiana, so we don't have to worry about hurricanes. You picked the one weekend sandwiched between two hurricanes to go to Florida. So that was really good timing of you.
Well, to be fair, I was in Florida like 3 weeks earlier also for Tampa pre-release or world premiere. But true. I did. The timing was quite good for me. I was not stuck during a hurricane, not there for the hurricanes. And I think it would be nice if card game tournaments didn't happen in Florida in fall when it's hurricane season. It seems.
Yeah, like good old Indiana. It's a great place. No hurricanes happening here.
Mm-hmm. I am ready for the calling Indiana number 3. Mm-hmm. I bet it'll be a good one when it happens. Maybe
Columbus, Ohio. That's a classic. Everybody loves Columbus.
Columbus, Cincinnati. I like Cincinnati quite a bit. It's nice and close.
Yeah. We'll see.
We got Chicago coming up in a couple months.
Yeah. True. We'll see. Maybe I'll be quitting Flesh and Blood again by then because I can't win games anymore. My yips have continued. I cannot. Every time I sit down and draft, I'll draft. I was drafting with Tarek last night. We drafted a really solid, really good Verdant deck with like Channel of the Millennium Tree and Recursion and all kinds of good stuff. Just immediately lost to a Florian. I draft a Celio. I lose. I draft Aurora. I lose. And like, I think this will be your third time hearing me say this, but I'm going to say it for the first time for our listeners. But every time I feel like I'm doing one thing, like I'm zigging, my opponents are zagging. And every time I'm zagging, my opponents are zigging. Where it's like, if I want to play towards like a fatigue end game, then I just lose a race. And every time I want to play like a racing game, my opponents just fatigue me. And it's like, this is something's just not adding up with this format in my brain.
Yeah, I don't really know how to fix it when something's not clicking. I do think that there's a lot of like nuance to this format where you're mostly trying to like do something between racing and fatiguing in a lot of games where like you're trying to get the most value out of your cards as you can, both in terms of like each card getting the most value it can get in terms of like spending it from your deck and also getting the most value as you can out of each hand. And it can be hard to find the right balance there where like sometimes you should be blocking with your 7 power attacks that block 2 because you're going to die if you just hold 3 of them and you intellect penalty or you pitch 2 of them to play another one. But at the same time, you really want to preserve the threats in your deck so that you can attack and trade up in terms of spending 1 card that attacks for 7 to trade for 2 or 3 of your opponent's cards that are getting 2 or 3 value.
Yeah. And it's just, I've been really struggling even like the draft composition where it's like, well, I feel like the decks you draft have to be very particular in the fact that like, well, you need like the talent cards to like have like functional like abilities. Then you need the 3 blocks, the class cards. Then you need like some life gain and some like damage mitigation to make sure you don't just die to like getting zapped turn after turn up and like against the wizards. And then you need ways to like spend your hand also against the wizards. So you need like go wide, go again things, but are like the auras to set up. And it's just like really difficult to like get that all together at the same time.
Yeah, I do think that like the life gain and the go again stuff usually kind of goes together. Most of the things that gain you life don't cost an action point in this format. Harvest Season, Arcane Polarity, the Earth life gain spell, even Count Your Blessings. I think the red is sometimes playable if you're desperate and construct or unlimited. but.
Yeah, like I've definitely played, well, I've had Arcane Polarities and Count Your Blessings and things like that, but like the wizard, like the arcane damage could be like really hard to stop, obviously, just because there's no arcane barrier. And I think that's the decks that have been beating me up the most that I've been struggling into, or it's just like my opponent's just like zapping, like surge, zap, surge, zap, surge, like some kind of effect. And like, especially with like a Celia where they can go like flash and then double zap. And then like, so that's like 6 to 7 arcane damage.
Yeah.
It's a lot.
And then you can't spend your hand and you're just like not able to block, not able to use your hand and just die.
Right. Yeah.
That makes sense.
So that's been happening to me quite a bit. And then when I try to do it, I have like hands where it's like, okay, well I can do like one zap and then I block a bunch and then I do like one zap and then I block a bunch and then I get fatigued and die. And I'm like, this did not work well for me.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense. I don't think there's like a quick and easy answer. And I do think that this is one of the, this like kind of challenges this format specifically, kind of like challenges different fundamental aspects than other formats have, where like fatigue matters and also being able to spend 4-card hands matter, and also your cards having real block values matters. And it's just like a lot of things are, I guess, different than formats we've played in the past.
Yeah. And you combine that with the fact I've never been particularly good at limited to begin with. And then you put like an expert mode, super difficult lineup format. It makes sense why I can't win a game.
I don't think I'd say that. I feel like you've always been quite good at sealed. It's just like draft for some reason is a lot harder for you.
Yeah. I don't know. But I think at this point, for my mental health, what I'm going to do for a week is learn how to play Dragon Ball Z Sparking Zero. I'm going to learn how to go. It's the new Dragon Ball Z fighting game that came out. It has all those Dragon Ball Z things. I'm going to learn how to go Super Saiyan. I'm going to learn how to go Super Saiyan 2. I'm going to learn how to go Super Saiyan 3. I'm going to do some fusion dances. It's going to be great. I'm going to learn how to go Super Saiyan Blue, I think is the new one. I haven't watched Super yet, so I'm kind of going to use this as like a way to like catch up on the new lore as well. So I think that's going to be my best mental health prep that I can go for, is just playing a lot of Dragon Ball Z Sparking Zero.
Okay, that sounds like a good time. I've never been a big Dragon Ball fan, but I do think that taking a break is generally very good when you're feeling burnt out or struggling with something. And I know when I've played Magic, I've taken breaks. I took a pretty big break from Flesh and Blood, where I skipped Amsterdam and didn't play the game for like 2 months or so in that time. I think I had a couple coaching sessions or something, but didn't really engage with the game at all outside of that. And I really think it's just really good to do. And if you sometimes like taking a break is just like you just don't want to come back because it's never something that you feel like you miss, and then you try it a little bit again and you're like, no, I don't really want to do this still. And that's sometimes that's for the best. And then other times you're like, man, I really miss this part of my life, this thing that I love doing, and I want to do it again. And you come in like rejuvenated, fresh, ready to like kind of learn a lot of the stuff that you either were blocking from your mind and not really able to learn it because you're like frustrated and like kind of built habits that are hard to break once you formed, or you're just like have more energy because you rested and you don't feel frustrated, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. And I hope like this could be of some value to our listeners, just in the fact that in the past, if I was burnt out or not happy with things or with other content creators, it's really easy to just come in and just be like, well, I hate everything. I hate Count Your Blessings and I hate Dio and I don't like X, Y, and Z. And like, I really don't want to be that negative anymore. Like, I think that's something that I've really tried working on is just, I think I even posted this maybe like a few weeks ago, where I don't want other people to feel bad for playing decks or strategies that they like. Because if they like it, that's great. Like, I'm super happy that they're enjoying whatever element of a card game or life that they're enjoying. So I don't really want to come at it from like a negative perspective, but it's difficult if there's just something that I'm lacking that I'm enjoying at the same time. So I think when that happens, it's really easy to be like, well, the game ought to be like this, or the metagame ought to be like that. And that's just not a trap I really want to fall into anymore, I don't think.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. That sounds really like healthy, I guess. I remember last year with Lexi, throw back, just both of us felt like we were kind of stuck in the game. And because of that, we were like, well, we don't really like how Lexi is and what Lexi does to the metagame and how she's just the best deck by a lot. And we kind of complained that that's not how the game should be. And like, a much more healthy thing would have just been taking a break and being like, okay, we can come back when Lexi's not going to be the best thing forever. And we can just come back when she's not, you know.
Yeah. And that was also kind of like the point of like, we were supposed to like branch out. It's just branching out has proven more difficult as well, where this way, like if there was a Lexi metagame or just something that we're really not enjoying in one game, we can just hop over to the other. But given that our relationship with Sorcery has changed in a way that it's hard to make content for it, I guess we could have talked about Alpha Clash, but it's just a game that I'm also not particularly happy with at the moment. Once again, I'm not going to be negative about it. It's just you still quite like it. You're willing to travel to Florida for it and all that stuff. But yeah. And there's only so many hours in a day to like try, pick up, learn, do things for card games.
Yeah. And it's also difficult when our interests aren't like super overlapping to make an episode. Like if I'm like, yeah, I've been playing a bunch of Alpha Clash. I went to this Alpha Clash tournament last weekend. And you're like, yeah, I've drafted the new Magic set and XYZ about it. I don't even know. I could not name a card from the new Magic set. So.
Oh, yeah. Duskmourne was okay. I did a lot of drafting of it. I, once again, just have, I have like a 50% win rate, but that's not enough to like maintain a winning level of gems on Arena. So then I ran out of gems and I was like, I'm tired of putting money into Arena. So I'm done drafting Duskmourn for the foreseeable future.
That makes sense. You have to have a very good win rate to like break even on Arena. I guess like the
60% at least. Like
I think 60, it's higher than that.
70. Yeah.
I think it's like between 70 and 80, but like that's not counting the daily gems. So if you're doing like one draft a day or half a draft a day, the daily gems can like really help, or daily gold coins can supplement it a lot.
That's fair. Maybe that was my problem. I was just doing too much at once instead of stringing it out to get more gold equity, but you know.
The Magic Arena min-maxing.
Yeah, I'm not used to it. Thankfully, Dragon Ball is sparking, completely free to play. They could have like put a bunch of microtransactions in it. There's like 100 plus characters in it. There's like a million character like customization costumes that are just all free to unlock in the game. So that's pretty cool.
Is it just like a $60 game that you just buy once?
Mm-hmm. You could opt. There's some DLC for it, for like the higher paid things. So like you could choose to spend like $100 or like $120 on it, depending on like if you want, because they're going to release more characters in the future for it. If you, in case you want like 150 plus characters or something like that. But there's like already way too much content in the base game, I feel like.
That makes sense. That makes sense.
And then in Classic Constructed, once again, I've spent so much time on New and Assassins, and I just don't think they're particularly amazing in this metagame. I don't think they're horrible, just because the Mystic Talent, especially in New, can only be so bad, but not... It's a deck that I feel like you can build to beat anything, but it's very hard to beat everything that you're expecting in the upcoming metagame.
Yeah, that makes sense. What... We played a couple games of Dio versus Usury, and that felt like it was going pretty well for you.
Yeah. The problem is Usury and Arun Blades, I think, is really bad.
Okay.
Because you don't have a high blue count to, like, AB particularly well. it's hard. They like the Runeblades have just a huge fridge, and they could play like defense reactions a little bit happier than Dio can. Not a lot, but some.
Yeah.
And they're just capable of just like, what I've been finding against the Runeblades is they're just a lot more resilient than other aggro decks have been in the past, where sometimes like against Zen in the last format, where sometimes you would like strip the blue out of his hand and like he just like is just has like a 3-card 5 or 6 now and stuff like that. Like sometimes his hand just falls apart when you disrupt him. But against Runeblades now, there's just like so much overlapping value where it feels like there's just mono 0 for 4s and just good equity no matter what they're doing. Like no matter if there's like I've had Runeblades have like 3-card 16s like out of nowhere, and it's like, oh, okay, that's a lot of damage. And it's hard to really, like, I can't like disrupt every card out of your hand. That's not really a feasible thing for new to do. And it's hard for the disruption that I am presenting to always line up with the very particular thing you want to be doing on that turn cycle. So that's been the trouble I've had there.
Yeah, I think it's kind of weird because I guess I can talk about Viscerai more than Aurora. I've been playing a lot more Viscerai than Aurora. I don't like Aurora very much. But I think that one thing that has kind of surprised me about the Viscerai deck is like this deck used to be a deck that just like, your opponent attacks you with CNC, you're like, dang it, I'm dead. Your opponent attacks you with a race face, you're like, dang it, I'm dead. But now, like, so much of the deck just blocks 3 now that when these big disruptive attacks are face up, a lot of the time you can just block 6 and take a reasonable turn. And on top of that, you have the Runeblade Fridge keeps getting better. They got Dyadic Carapace not that long ago, and the new hat. What's the new hat called?
The hat that makes you draw a card and they discard a card.
Yeah. Face Purgatory.
Face Purgatory, that one.
Yeah, their fridges just keep getting better and better. And I remember back in the day of playing Bravo against Briar and feeling like I was like jamming my head against the wall. And it just feels like Runeblades, they're not what they used to be, where they had a bunch of 2 blocks. And if you hit them with a Spinal Crush, they're like, well, I'm dead. Game's over.
Yeah. And they also have a lot more disruption on their own. And now between Succumb to Temptation, they have things like Snuff Out if they want it. On top of just like the disruption of just presenting a billion damage is pretty disruptive.
Yeah. That's my Enigma game plan. If you don't have life total, you have to block and then you can't kill my Auras.
Yeah. So we'll see. I think there's something there. I think the card I want to try particularly into the Runeblades now is Cut the Facade, the new Majestic, the 3 for 7, because hitting Malefic Incantation in particular seems like it's just worth a lot of value.
Yeah.
And yeah. I think most of the time it's just going to be a 3 for 8 that like blows up one of your rune chants, which is like fine. Sometimes it'll have more value, sometimes not, but I think it has a lot of upside, and you know, I'm just trying to focus on like getting good rate and racing you to a certain extent at the same time. It seems like a card that could be interesting.
Yeah, and I think the text that it can't be blocked by auras is relevant too. There's a few auras that Runeblades might want to block with. You look at Florian, he has the channels. You look at Viscerai, extra Malefics and Looming Doom can't block it. So I think It is actually relevant text, and it's also relevant that Enigma can't block it with Rage Spectre. I don't know if it's good enough for that matchup still, because you don't have that many auras that can actually block, but can't be blocked by Rage Spectre, can't be blocked by the Spectre auras if she's playing any of them.
Yeah, like I said, I think its floor just being a 3 for 7 is like fine. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I'll play it in that matchup. I need to test it more there, but it also gets a lot better if they start playing the Spectre auras again, which I think have been ticking up a decent amount again.
Yeah, and it's also a popper too. Sometimes they attack you with the Miraging Metamorph or Phantasmoclasm and you pop it with that.
Yeah, for sure. We'll see. But I think I'm just locked on you at this point. I put on too much work onto the deck to try to pivot to something else and feel comfortable about it, especially if I'm planning on taking this hiatus. I have a list that I am happy with overall. I think there's maybe like 3 or 4 slots. I keep tuning back and forth depending on if I want to hedge more towards a one particular metagame or another. I think the biggest question I have is like, how represented will Enigma actually be in the face of Dio and these Runeblades? And like, I feel like everybody keeps saying, yeah, this metagame is going to get really bad for Enigma. And then, yeah, but Enigma is going to be like 25% of the meta. Everybody's just going to play Enigma anyways. And it's like, interesting.
Yeah, it's weird because I think I played Enigma when she was at her worst, when Fi was basically the best deck. And that's part of what led me to, or Zen. Yeah. All these ninjas. Fi was not when Fi was at his best. Fi was at his best. Stubby Hammers Belittle back in the day. Art of War. When Zen was at his peak CC strength, I played Enigma at US Nationals. It was not a good choice. I felt good into everything except Zen. I could not beat Zen at all. And I lost pretty badly to Zen two times, I think, in that tournament. And just a couple other losses knocked me out of contention. But I think one thing I can say about Enigma is she's very fun to play as. I don't think she's very fun to play against, but it's really fun to just block with your hat, make your mirror guy, attack with 8 for 8 with it, attack with your CNC afterwards and say, good luck killing my mirror guy.
Yeah. Mirror guy, definitely a hell of a drug. Very, and especially with the builds that Pablo really popularized with playing the new arm piece that can just generate the root, the, not the rune, the spectral shield. Shields and the arcanic. What's the card that puts a bunch of once points counters on a
aura? Astral Etchings.
Astral Etchings. Thank you.
Yeah, it's kind of like build your own spectral manifestation on demand with the gloves and the Astral Etchings. And then Astral Etchings also blocks 3, but it gives you more outs to basically have this spectral shield with 3 counters on it and then spend your last resource to attack with the Restless Coalescence that you play after you attack with it and then move the 3 counters over to that. And it's a pretty clean 3 cards that attack for 4 and then 5. So 3 card 9 on offense, but then you have all these shields to block that get ward value on defense. So it's usually like ends up being like a 3 card 13 or 14, if, depending on how many shields you get out of your manifestation or Restless Coalescence. Mm-hmm. And even more if it lives longer and you get attacked with the Restless Coalescence again.
Yeah. And then last but not least, everybody's still really upset about Count Your Blessings. I saw my weekly couple posts of this card needs to be banned now posts on Twitter. And I said I was going to mute it, the word blessing, but I don't know. I didn't actually go into my settings because I'm lazy. So I just shadow muted it in my mind where I just don't engage with those posts anymore. I just scroll past it.
Yeah, I don't know if it's just that like I'm being exposed to more of the negativity in the game now that I'm like kind of maybe more involved in Twitter. I'm not exactly sure, but I feel like there's been more complaints about Count Your Blessing than ICE ever got. And that's crazy to me.
Yeah, like the amount of hate for that card is like beyond my wildest expectations for like when I first saw it. I was like, oh, okay, cool. Like it's a thing you could do and life gains like maybe a strategy potentially. But people just really, really hate Count Your Blessings. I don't like, it's just something about them like psychologically like breaks when they're like, oh man, my opponent like gained life, and even though I was able to do my strategy perfectly through no disruption and deal a bunch of damage, I still feel bad in this gameplay experience for some reason, which isn't something that I would think would happen, right? Because like in my mind, if I thought about like life gain, I would think life gain is like an interesting dial to like turn up a little bit, because this way, you know, you're still enabling fatigue strategies to like exist, go long, get to like later games because they have more of that life resource to work with. But your opponent's still able to do their cool, fun, powerful thing. Like it feels like good to do cool, fun, powerful things. But no, it's the opposite. People are like, man, I would rather sit here through Channel Lake Frigid and not be able to play the game at all than deal with Count Your Blessings. And it's like, okay, that's an interesting take, but I never, here we are.
Yeah, I also think there is something where like the people that are unhappy are generally the loudest. People that are like happily casting their Count Their Blessings that are like really happy that these cards exist. They're not gonna be going on Twitter like Count Your Blessings is so cool. I love Count Your Blessings. That's just like not how social media really, or at least Twitter really works, I feel like.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there are a lot of people that are really happy Count Your Blessings exists, and they're the ones that are casting it that the other people are, or some, I think some very small minority of the community is unhappy with, but the small minority are, social media amplifies negativity. So
yeah, maybe I should be more negative then. This is bad for our views and our coverage. I need to go back to being salty, negative Roger all the time. If I just complain and say everything's bad and I know what's best, everybody will want to listen. That's what social media wants.
Do you think that will make you happier if we have slightly more engagement and you're being all negative all the time?
That's the funny thing about happiness, Michael, is I don't know what will make me happy. If everybody knew what would make them happy, they would just do the thing that would make them happy, right?
I do the things that make me happy.
Well, lucky you.
You like set goals. You're like, what do I want to do? And then you go do it. And then the journey makes you happy. Getting there makes you happy. I don't know.
I agree that the journey makes me happy, but I don't know that getting there makes me happy.
Reaching your goals doesn't make you happy?
Not particularly. It's like the hedonic treadmill. It's my favorite thing to talk about. It's my favorite treadmill. We've talked about it a lot. I've talked about it personally to a lot of people.
Uh-huh.
Do you remember what it is?
I will as soon as you start reminding me.
It's when you reach a certain level of happiness, your baseline brain gets used to that level of happiness. And then you just keep wanting to go more and more to the next step, to the next step, to the next step. And despite your life generally keep improving, your brain just stays at a consistent level of happiness regardless. And once you reach a certain baseline.
Yeah. And that's why you got to set more goals. Like I remember going back to a time, World's 2022. When I took down Worlds, I was very happy. And then I was kind of actually lost for a while. I didn't really know what to do. Because I was really, really happy for definitely the next couple of days, and then probably pretty happy for a week or two. And then I'm now what do I work towards? Because I accomplished my goal, you know? And I would say that getting there, oh my gosh, getting there made me happy. But then I had kind of finished the journey, and not having a new journey kind of was a little bit sad. I needed something else to work at.
Yeah.
Then I made my camp card game, which was sick.
That we didn't play this year.
Yes, we did not play it this year.
Oh, well.
But I didn't make new cards. I didn't want to run the same thing back.
Yeah, there's always next year. But you're going to do some ProQuest still? You're healthy enough to go do your ProQuest this weekend now?
Yeah, though I didn't think there was one this weekend for us. I think that
this isn't the weekend you're going to wherever.
There's one in Anderson. I thought it was the 20th, but now I'm going to have to double check.
I thought you were flying to New York or something.
Oh, I'm flying to New York the weekend before Osaka to go double ProQuest.
The 26th?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was this weekend.
No.
Oh, yeah. I'm having family photos done on the 12th. We have a professional photographer booked to get some lovely photos of myself and my wife in Austin. My wife just likes photos, so we're gonna get some photos done. So no ProQuest for me on Saturday.
Yeah, I didn't think there were any ProQuests that were reasonably drivable, but I am also going to a Renaissance Fair with Casey on Saturday. So
a Renaissance Fair.
Yeah, I don't know what to expect. I've never been to one, but
I've never been to one either. Interesting. Well, I hope you have fun at your Renaissance Fair.
Thank you. I hope you have fun getting photos taken.
Yeah, and it's perfect for my hiatusing. And then I'll come back on the 19th and we'll do a draft ProQuest. And then I might try to go do a classic instructor ProQuest on the 20th. I'll just do a double ProQuest weekend and then take it the next weekend off. And then we'll be in Osaka. It'll be world's time.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's close.
It is close. It's like 19 days away at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, that's our flight is in 19 days.
Mm-hmm. Right around the corner.
Oh.
I got to start not losing all my games sometime soon. I got 19 days to stop losing all my games all the time, 100% of my games.
Doesn't sound like the healthiest way to phrase this.
To be fair, that's a really healthy goal, right? If my goal is to not lose 100% of my games, as soon as I win one game, I could go 1-6 in the Pro Tour and I will have achieved my goal of what I wanted to set out to accomplish, right? Boom. Do you think I could go 1-6 in the Pro Tour? Worlds?
I think you'll do better than 1-6 at Worlds.
I think I'll go 1-6 in Worlds. I believe in me. I believe Roger will get 1-6 and it'll be not a 0% win rate. It'll be great.
Okay. I also think you'll have a good time in Osaka.
That's probably true. My buddy, Steve, reached out to me. He lives in Japan. I went to high school with this guy named Steve. And he's like, oh, he started listening to the podcast a few weeks. And then I hit him up on Discord. He joined our Discord. And he's going to pop over and hang out with us for Worlds. He lives in the Kyushu Oita Prefecture, I think he said. And I'm looking forward to seeing him. That'll be sick. I haven't seen him in like a decade.
Since high school?
A long time.
Okay. Yeah.
I saw him a little bit post high school, but I don't remember when the exact last time I saw Steve is. But now I'm going to see Steve in Japan. You're going to meet Steve in Japan.
Cool. Cool. Does he play Flesh and Blood? You said he listened to the podcast.
He's going to start.
Okay. What better place to start than the World Championship?
And who better to learn from someone who doesn't have a 0% win rate, you know? It's the perfect person to learn from, because this way it's not too challenging. He won't get defeated too much, but he'll get good enough to actually learn how to play the game. I'm the perfect person to like test into at this point if you're new.
Mm-hmm. So taking a break, setting good goals. Any other mental health tips for our audience?
I think the one that I hear a lot, but never really works for me, is like the whole perspective thing, where it's like, well, like think about things objectively. Like you are in a really good spot and you're happy, or you should be happy because you have like a healthy body and you're relatively young and you have people who love you and I have a home and like I have like all of like my baseline needs met. I'm not starving. I'm not in like a war stricken area or a hurricane stricken area. Like the list of things I should or I ought to be happy about is so long. And then like the reason why I'm unhappy is because little teeny tiny pieces of rectangles don't say I win this arbitrary rule set enough is like absurd on like a macro level, but it's still how I like feel, you know? It's so weird.
Mm-hmm. I think if you take all that things that you should be happy about and change it to just like appreciating them, I think that would be beneficial. Cause like, I think saying you should be happy is a great way to feel miserable. Like anytime you should be happy, like feeling like you're supposed to be happy here is just like, it's not good for actually feeling happy. But like, even if you're like down and not feeling like the best about your life or whatever, just like trying to like be appreciative of those kind of things does, in my experience at least, lead to being happier.
Yeah. And I think it's one of those things where if I take a step back and look at it from like a more Buddhist perspective, it's wanting is the root of all suffering. So I want to be happy, or I want to be good at these little pieces of rectangle cardboard games. Like if I just was more, and we look at that when I was talking about like people being negative, right? Because they want the game to be a particular style of way. They want the metagame to look like a certain thing. They want a certain expectation based on like what their gameplay experiences should be. And like they're super miserable because the things aren't lining up with what they want. So I just need to work on wanting things less, I suppose. That's something I should probably get back into doing again. Maybe meditating would help again. I don't know.
Yeah, that's a really good point. It does all kind of fit in very Like all the unhappiness is caused by desire in this example, I feel like, or a lot of examples. That's I'm not as familiar with Buddhist philosophy as you, but this is a good point.
Yeah. Yeah. The Buddha knew some things about enlightenment, it turns out. Who knew?
Who knew?
Well, I think I'm wanting to wrap up this episode now. Do you have any final thoughts?
I appreciate you coming on to talk about mental health with me. I know that things are, the game is not going as well as you would like it to. And I also do appreciate you postponing from Tuesday night. I am feeling much better now and just going to try to appreciate all the things that are good in my life, because that is helpful for me.
Yeah. Well, I really appreciate the appreciation, Michael, and I hope you appreciate that I appreciate your appreciation.
I appreciate that. I find it very amusing that you said that.
And I think the other thing is, like, I'm in law school still part-time. I have my job going on. Like, I think a part of it should be, like, I feel burnt out just on, like, not, like, just on, like, too many things going on. Mm-hmm. But I don't, that's not necessarily a part of it. Like, I feel like I'm managing all the things going on well, and that's not causing me stress at the moment. Like, if anything, I appreciate the distraction of, like, having these other things to take my mind off of silly little cardboard games. And, like, especially whenever I'm hanging out with, like, my wife or Austin, like, those are always, like, the moments that those are always the best parts of my day. But yeah.
It's a good time of day.
Hanging out with family. Well, next time you're spending time with the people you love and care about, always remember, mind your manners. Thanks for watching. And